Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network. AfterBuzz TV, over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, and welcome to another episode of House of Cards, Season 3. Whoa, we have a mosquito in here. Episode 5, Chapter 31, After Show. My name is Pegarad. You can find me on Twitter, at Pegarad. And my lovely co-host joining me tonight, and every night.
Hello, everybody. My name is Autumn Chiklis, and you can find me at Twitter, at Autumn Chiklis.
I'm Julian Dujaric. I'm Julian Dujaric, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram and all across social media at Julian Dujaric.
Hi there, I'm Quinn Skillian. You can find me on Twitter at Quinn Skillian. So happy to be here.
Yay!
Yeah!
Now, before we get started, if you guys are listening to us on the AfterBuzz TV app or if you're hearing us on iTunes, make sure to check us out on YouTube. We have over 100 shows a week that we make for you guys. So go comment and check all those shows out, and you can see what we're wearing. We look really cool. Autumn's looking gorgeous.
I know.
Thank you.
All right, let's get into the episode. A lot of moving pieces in this episode.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I mean, we're definitely setting things up for what's going to come later this season. I think this episode was all about just kind of getting the puzzle pieces in place, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree with all of that. Everything she said. It's good to see this kind of setup because it's so early in the season, and so it's nice to like anticipate, okay, is that for this reason or that reason? You kind of, at least I love to kind of put theories out there as to what I think is going to happen. So I like episodes like this that kind of set up the bigger stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the, I spent a lot of this episode going, okay, what is this person's play? What is this person's plan? What are we going to doing? And then obviously going into prediction mode.
Yeah.
Like, well, if doing my own little chess pieces and going, well, if I move this here and then no, then the queen will take it.
Yeah.
So I was like going over in my head in my like House of Cards chess, which they should make. They should make a House of Cards chess set.
Yeah.
Don't put that out there because then you can make it.
I need to patent it.
I need to patent it.
Applying for patent tomorrow. Don't even try.
So the episode starts out with Frank trying to get the legal wordage about the whole FEMA relief funds and if he can use it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it boils down to the president can call a national crisis if he wants. I mean, they looked at the verbiage and it was like, yeah, legally you could get away with this. I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Well, legally you can get away with a lot of things.
Yeah, and I love that, like, the it needed to be sufficiently vague enough that he could get away with this.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, what you're doing, you can get around enough barriers here because you're not saying anything specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
I think that's really funny that was needed to get this whole thing moving.
Yeah, and Silva's not buying it. Silva is not
I know.
So Frank meets with Barney. He's the mayor of Washington, D.C., right? And he knows that if he can get him on his side to rally for AmWorks, then that's a great thing because he obviously can't take it to Congress. He knows that they're going to say no right away.
And what a spitfire this guy is. He's just trying really hard to just get people like riled up, and I love that.
Oh, wow. There was virtually no convincing on his part.
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the first time we've ever seen anyone, like, get handed AmWorks and be like, Yeah, let's do this, because everybody else has been so skeptical. It's so funny to finally have someone, like, fully on Frank's side with this.
Yeah, and I remember Frank looking into the camera and going, we need more people like this, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, which is a little bit of a dangerous thing. Anytime Frank goes, you know who, we need more people like this, I automatically look at this person a little funny.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
because this person, not you, sweetie, no, but no, this person, theoretical person.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mm, has this, something.
Yeah. Not to mention any names, Pega.
Yeah. Then we cut to Dunbar. She's doing her nomination tour.
Her press tour,
whatever.
Call
her press tour.
Sure.
And she has John Pasternak, which is Michael Corrigan's husband. And she's on the Meredith Vieira show. And she's trying to be likable. And
it's interesting because she's obviously bringing up, you know, questions surrounding Frank's, how Frank feels about the LGBT community.
Yeah.
After he really, really dodged, what's her name?
Isla's
question. Yes. And so now I think, like, Dunbar's kind of trying to kind of point the big neon sign over in Frank's direction, kind of being like, he's, you know, he's not quite, you know, he's not being,
oh, yeah,
he's not being very decisive with those, where those kinds of things are concerned.
Yeah, if not decisive, he's being very dodgy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's completely avoiding his stance on it, which, as social issues are concerned, you often see in politics them try to dodge because they know that they're hot emotional buttons for people, and that more often than not in modern day politics, the social issues are what determine the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Right. More often than not, even people who aren't very politically active go, I don't know what I believe in, but I am pro or against abortion, or I don't know what I believe in, but I know that I'm pro or against gay rights, and then they base their entire vote on that, not necessarily fiscal issues or what have you. So they're bringing that element into the show of, wait, here's a major social issue that no one has addressed. And in his personal life, we've seen some kind of weird stuff going on that we don't know if he's bisexual. We don't know if he's just, there's certain specific people. I mean, we've seen him have a threesome. There's that sexual chemistry he had with his former...
Meechum.
The college buddy. Yeah. So I think that's got to be brought more to light.
Yeah. Speaking of the public vote, I think that's something that was really missing for me that has kind of been answered at the end of this episode, but I kept wanting to know was, like, how does the public feel about Amworks? Because up until now, the only things that we as viewers can see is what the politicians and the media is saying about it so far, and we only know what they are saying in terms of how that like manages their own agenda. We don't even know if what they're saying about Amworks is actually how they feel about it. As long as just like what they're saying to other people about it is like, and so I was really, really interested this entire time to be like, what is the public reaction to this?
Right. And we'll get to the end, obviously, when you have the tent and
of
the people, because I think you have,
but those are the people, those are the unemployed people who need the jobs. What about like wealthy, gainfully employed Americans? How do they feel about this? And how do they feel about the reappropriations? We haven't heard anything about that.
I think the important thing is that it almost doesn't matter in this world.
True.
In this world, it's much more about how these people's agenda, how this serves or does not serve these people's agendas, which is why we don't really see much of the public opinion.
No, it's true. And this has been, I mean, this is not the first time this has happened, but it's hard with something like this, with this bill and the other bills that Frank has had, where it's kind of like, I don't know how I feel about this because I, as a viewer, I'm only seeing what the politicians are saying. And you're like, I feel like the need to see what the public is saying. So I know that how I feel about it is how, like, I'm supposed to be feeling about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, Jackie. Now, Frank wants Jackie to announce her candidacy. But he's doing it because they want to steal votes from Dunbar.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be able to steal the woman's vote. So she's got to play it up. She's got to get married, according to Remy, and, you know, do that whole, I'm a married woman, I have a family, and kind of tend to all the women.
So funny, because it's so not who she is
it's
at
not,
all.
Oh, my God.
Know?
Can you imagine her?
She's like the anti-housewife.
Oh, my
God. Yes. And then he wants her, you know, to flip as soon as things go further, whatever, flip and become his VP.
VP.
All right. But that's, how does that service her? That's my question. If she doesn't think that he's going to get reelected.
Like, I know.
Why would she, I mean, obviously she has her own plan up her sleeve, else she would not go along with this.
Does she not think, yeah. Well, then that probably she does think that he has a chance, because she doesn't seem like a dumb girl to me. She seems very smart, so I don't know that she believes that he won't be elected.
Well, then we've seen earlier her making deals with, I'm blanking, who did she make a deal with saying, I want the VP? No, she was talking to Remy when she said she wanted the VP ticket.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You're right, she's a very smart girl, which is why I feel like everyone, unless she's in on the fact that Frank is ultimately going to pull off this big scheme, most people are in the camp that, yes, Frank is going to run, but he, there's no way he's going to win.
Yeah, maybe she has something else up her sleeve that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
Because she is smart, and you're right. Like, now that we're talking about this, I'm like, do we think that Jackie thinks that Frank is actually going to win?
If she does, she has to be playing a major part in it, because we've been given, from a filmmaking perspective, we've been given no indication on her side that she has trust in Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me, normally they'd show us a little hand, if you will, saying a snippet of her going, indicating in some way that she knows something about Frank's campaign or his plan, but mm-hmm. we haven't been given that.
Well, maybe they're being restrictive, you know what I mean?
That's possible.
And they just really want us to not see it coming, just like what they're doing with Doug right now. They really don't want us to know how, because, you know, especially with, and I'll never remember his name, the guy who plays Doug, the way he performs that part is with no indication towards his emotions at all. And I think that that's a huge part of, like, how they want us to see Doug.
Yes, but that's intentional.
Well, yeah.
Like, but we know there's a level of anonymity or kind of there's an enigmatic attitude around him, because from a dramatic audience perspective, we know
that we're not
consciously we're not supposed to know, and we're supposed to be on the edge of our seat.
Yeah.
With Jackie, there's been no, like, what is she, like, we had the what is she up to, and then she said she wanted to be VP. But on Frank's ticket, there's been no, it's missing a layer to me.
I almost feel like there's an easier way for her to become vice president than with there's a better bet out there than Frank.
Maybe, or maybe we're just overthinking it. Maybe she just thinks that this is the best ticket for her to go on.
I just couldn't see an alternative. Like, there may be a better alternative. I just don't see what that is.
So I
think for her, this is the smartest play that she feels like she can make.
That's fair.
I guess I'm just surprised that she's putting so much faith in him.
I was surprised. Yeah, I'm definitely surprised in that regard. I think maybe because she's so smart, we have to kind of give her the benefit of the doubt.
Maybe she'll just stay on and
maybe
be elected president. We never know.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, yeah, but it's possible. Speaking of Doug, so he's watching Dunbar on the Meredith Vieira show, and he asks his therapist, like, would you vote for her? Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, she seems cool, you know? And this kind of triggers him to, you know, he goes in, and that's when she offers him a salary. Right? Is that?
He goes to her and offers his services.
When she's in Iowa?
Yes.
Is this before Iowa? I think it is. I think that was the second meeting.
I don't know, but she gives her a low ball salary, and he says that he just wants to be valued.
Mm.
And he knows what he can do.
And I loved how smart that was, that he wasn't, if he was a mole, he would have taken the first offer.
Like, right. Yes, I'll do it.
And even before Dunbar said that, I was like, oh, good job. Good job. That was smart. That was so smart.
Yeah, play hard to get a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you don't... Listen, I'm saying that I believe in you, but I'm not going to do it for no money. I mean, it's the classic double agent thing, where if you want them to believe you're sincere, do everything in the world to convince them that you don't care.
That you don't want to work for them, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So,
how far do we think Doug will go, though, with this
very
whole thing?
Far.
All the way.
As far as he needs to go. And probably even further, just in case. I think Doug has that kind of mentality. He will not stop until he achieves what he wants, and then he'll stick it in just a little
bit. And he's just going to play dirty, you know what I mean? That whole scene with him talking to Dunbar, being like, you need to... I don't remember, something about...
Where he brings Claire's doctor's journal, the medical journal?
Yeah, that, but there was also another thing where... I'll never remember. But he was talking on the phone outside the physical therapist's office, mm-hmm. and he was getting Dunbar to do something or to blackmail someone a little bit. And I
think
like,
that might be in the next episode when you're talking about the prisons. Are you talking about...
We'll get there. He's going to get her to play dirty, that's all
yeah.
I'm saying.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. And he has such... The thing that's very persuasive about Doug Stamper is the fact that he gets things done. And we've always seen him, from the beginning of the series, get things done mm-hmm. in a way that no one else really does. And very silently. Even if Frank has always kind of been his puppeteer, he's doing a lot of the dirty work mm-hmm. for him. He's getting his hands dirty. And so we know he'll go all the way for things yep. that he cares about or that he thinks are going to benefit him. Yep. I mean, he's feeding himself alcohol with a syringe. I mean, that's not exactly a mentally stable human being. I'm sorry if I offend any people who have that tendency. But
yeah, it's all the rage right now.
Sorry for all the alcohol syringe consumers.
It's okay, guys. Apology accepted.
Okay, I just want to make sure I cover my bases. But in all seriousness, this is a guy who is not mentally stable mm-hmm. and has done pretty heinous things in the past. Yep. And we see is willing to do heinous things in the future to serve his own ticket, so.
Silent but violent.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows that...
I want a t-shirt with his face. Silent but violent. I don't actually want a t-shirt.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I do.
He was patent pending, part two.
Patent pending.
Wow.
You're going to make a lot of money.
I'm going to make so much money off of my various house of cards. I'm in the wrong business.
Memorabilia.
Yeah, well, because Doug was supposed to burn that journal that had notes about Claire's abortion. Yeah.
You don't think he would burn it. By the way, you think he would have done it because it was for the Underwoods.
You would think. But it just shows how ruthless he is.
That does not surprise me.
Not me either.
Not in the least.
Right away, I was just like, of course.
Of course. Yeah.
I have too much faith in people.
And that's the way he just kind of like shows her and pulls it. I'm like, oh,
so
cold.
It's so slimy, right?
Yeah. And she didn't take much convincing either. She was like, I could never do this. Well, okay.
I mean, if you think about it, there's some things that really, that she does not want people to know. So,
mm-hmm. she lied on public television.
Yeah, of course. So she wants, you know, she wants to keep it under wraps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So later that night, or I think it's that same night, Frank goes to Claire and asks her to read over a draft that he has. And I thought that was really cute. Like, she looks over, she makes a couple corrections, and then he sits down and goes, you know, you've been in this room and I've never spent the night with you. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of closes off that conversation. Like, I have a flight to catch tomorrow morning. I need to get some sleep.
Mm-hmm. So sad.
And I'm like, we're starting to see little bits of their marriage.
Little tears
maybe.
Here and there. Yeah. Yeah, I know. And it really does make us nervous as viewers, because even though we see Frank and Claire do despicable things, at the end of the day, we want them to win. You know, we just
see
do.
Them do despicable things together.
Exactly. And so it's like, and we know that like the Underwoods are stronger together than they are apart. And so that's why, you know, it makes us really, really nervous to see them, you know, a little bit.
The couple that manipulates together.
Stays together.
or destroys an entire country.
There you go.
Depending. Claire, you know I love you, but damn it, why'd you do this?
She's losing her spark, isn't she?
I was just so upset with even just the little romantic thing. I was like, why don't you spend the night with me tonight? It wasn't even romantic. It was just sweet. It was just like, I'm your husband. You know what? I'm the president and you are the UN ambassador, but we're also a couple. Like, and finally, and it was Frank of all people, and she's just like, I have a flight.
Which is like, my sleep.
And it's not her usual, like, I'm just too good for, I'm too good for y'all. Get under my really expensive and wonderful designer shoes. It was more just I'm way too in my head and too busy and I don't care.
Yeah, and I just really think that she's not she's not as in control as she's used to being. Mm-mm. And she's really starting to waver.
Except once in this episode, at the end, which was a super power play.
I can't wait to get to that. So he goes and he plays this game on his iPad, which later on we'll find out.
Isn't that so funny to see him, like,
I think it was kind of silly.
And he was great. He's, like, laying, like, flat down on the couch, and there's the chessboard was right in front of him, just to kind of hammer him.
Still have a patent pending.
But it was just so, it was so great to be, like, this is, like, the most childish thing.
Nerd moment, that shot, too. The shot coming into that, which was like a slow impeding on, or just like a slow zoom in onto Frank and into his room. Mm-hmm. It was oof.
That was really
it was
cool.
A nice push right in. It was gorgeous. Just a little.
It was.
They should use that as a slogan. It was a nice push.
It was a nice push.
A nice push.
In front of a bus.
So then we have the mayor. He declares the state of emergency in the District of Columbia, and they're going to use the $3 billion that's in this disaster relief fund.
And right before hurricane season.
Right before hurricane season. I mean, this is a huge risk that they're taking. Mm-hmm.
But here's my question. Is Frank doing this, trying to pull this $3 billion so he can get... as leverage. He's going to use this as leverage, so that way he's going to tell the head of the... what is his name? The head of the Republicans.
Oh, Mendoza.
And the head of the...
Bob.
Yeah. He's going to tell them, okay, I won't take this $3 billion if you guys get on board with AmWorks.
I think he's trying to use AmWorks in D.C. as a microcosm for the rest of the country. Remember, he wants AmWorks to work across the board in all states.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's using this as a way to show not just the public at large, but also the people that are voting against, that are trying to get that off the table.
Mm-hmm.
Look, this worked here. It can work for the rest of the nation.
I just wasn't sure if he was using this $3 billion as leverage to encourage bipartisanship to get them on board.
He's already using it.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Not gone. But
his intention is to use that money for AmWorks.
Okay.
It's in place. There's no bluffing going on.
Got it.
Unless I misunderstood. No. But he is...
Which is when I started seeing Mendoza and...
Bob. I call him Bob.
Bob worked together. I was like, oh, I wonder if maybe that's what he was aiming for there. But
I mean, that's why he went to the governor... The mayor?
Mayor?
Mayor.
Mayor. The mayor.
Sorry. That's why he went to the mayor to present this plan, to present this idea, because he wants, like I said, he wants AmWorks to work all across the board.
And the issue is, now that they've tapped into the relief fund, if something were to happen, like a hurricane or an earthquake or something devastating, when you have drained the funding, you are going to see a lot... It's just a risk that... is difficult to, first of all, predict, because it's,
Mother Nature, though. Let me tell you, in Florida,
there will be hurricanes come hell or high water. There will be. But when you think about it, it's so odd to think about natural disasters, especially from a political perspective, because it's just this entirely different, uncontrollable force. Mm. So, yeah.
But Frank was saying, if there is a natural disaster, there are other ways for them to give that money back.
Well, yeah, I think Frank said something like, well, and if a disaster hits, then Congress will just replenish the funds like they always do. And I'm like, it's not that easy.
Not three billion dollars.
You can't just make it, bring up money from nowhere. You have to take it from another, there's the set number of, I think this is how a budget works. There's a set amount of money, and you have to bring it from somewhere.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's a very big risk. Either you put however many people are going to go to work through the AmWorks program to work, or you assist the people that are going to be going through this natural disaster, which we don't know yet, I guess, at this point in the episode, if it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But that's the risk.
It's crazy. He really bullied this through. I mean, he requested a resignation from the Homeland Security, the head of Homeland Security. And
the word tyrant was brought up.
Oh, yes.
So, he was no holds barred.
Yeah, but that's he was making a speech.
That's the way he's run his campaigns. That's the way he's, not his campaign. That's the way he runs his ship. He's someone who runs like a tyrant.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It's just he's never had this amount of power to utilize.
Right.
There've been shades all over, but now that he has been, now he's the leader of the free world, then we're seeing just how far that can go. And the word tyrant was brought up, and I'll get more into the specifics of my feelings about that when we get into the propaganda book. But you really see in this kind of instance how these people find their way into power. Obviously, our system is very specific. But when some, there are two sides, I guess what I'm getting at and kind of articulating poorly is that there are two sides to it. Yes, he's getting things done, but in a way that is very tyrannical. He's not really going through the checks and balances system. So it's kind of a, shoot, yes, he's actually doing something, and so many of the complaints are that politicians can't get anything done, but at the same time, they can't get things done for a reason because we have a bipartisan government for a reason. Mm-hmm. So,
we need to talk about Baldwin, by the way.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So she comes in. She's the new Telegraph reporter. She meets with Seth, kind of goes off on him about getting rid of Isla, but they have no idea. Yeah. This new girl is about to bring twice as much trouble. And she goes and she meets with Silva, and he gives her a folder of all the meteorological data about this hurricane coming up, so that he's kind of trying to make headlines.
She couldn't get anyone to go on the record for her.
Yeah. But she ends up writing these two huge stories anyway.
The human cost of raiding FEMA.
Yeah.
And President Sachs on land security.
Two awesome side by headlines.
Side. Yeah.
Yeah. Side by side. And obviously Frank sees this and blows up.
You know what he said? You kicked out a pit bull and let in a dragon.
That was awesome. That was awesome. And in ways, he's absolutely right.
He is.
I go back and forth on this because there's my objective self and then there's my I love House of Cards self. And my objective self is going, good. Good. Way to go, journalism. Fight the power. This is absolutely... It's not unconstitutional, technically, even though most of the things that he's done to get into power are unconstitutional. But I go back and forth between, because I want for him, because I love House of Cards, but I also want for the journalist.
To be honest, I honestly think that when it's Frank versus media, that's like my favorite House of Cards drama. I like the foreign stuff. I like the kind of interpersonal stuff, but I love when the journalists are involved.
Well, it's more, to me anyway, I don't know about you, but to me it brings up more of the morality. Because when it's just on the individuals, like when it's, you know, him, U.S. versus Russia, or him versus this one person in Senate, or what have you, it draws less of a perspective.
Because when we, as Quinn and Julian and Autumn and Becca, when we're watching the politics, that's how we get our news.
Exactly.
We don't get to see the inside. So whenever it's like connected to him in the media, that's when all of a sudden things start to look pretty familiar. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And there's where the perspective comes in.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you realize that they're not such good people. And we probably shouldn't be rooting for them, but we do.
We do. It's TV.
So while all this is going on, Claire is fighting her own battles. She learns that, where does she go off to? She's meeting with the ambassadors, but I didn't know if it was...
She's in New York.
New York. Okay. So she learns that Palestine is going to be withdrawing from this peace initiative because Israel is.
Yes.
And Israel is because they don't believe that the U.S. will actually send the troops to the location once this is agreed upon. Yes. So she decides to stop the whole vote because everybody's all over the place and not agreeing.
You have to postpone the vote because then you lose.
Yeah, you lose it. Anything else on that part?
Interesting. Do you guys think that, I mean, even if Frank hadn't issued the executive order, do you think that they would have sent troops?
Do you think it was so? I never got an indication.
Yeah, I didn't.
She seemed pretty adamant in explaining when she received the news that they were pulling out Israel.
Yeah, it felt so weird for that to even be a problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. So I think he would have done it anyway.
Right.
So I was like, yeah. This seems like a lot of drama for no reason. But
well, from their perspective, I think it's understandable because, I mean, now we're going to get into, you know, greater politics.
Let's
I'll say this. It's understandable that any country has their best interest in mind. The United States, Israel, any country will have their best interest in mind, as they should, ultimately, because it's their own nation and how it... And then, obviously, foreign policy, and everyone wants to get along, but they don't. And my point is, I can understand why, if a country feels like they are going to be threatened, that they would be hesitant to... It's not as simple as putting in a good word. It's, you know, there will be consequences to whatever they do, and because every action has a consequence. I can understand why Israel or any other country would be a little hesitant to support a country if they weren't necessarily sure that they would get something.
Yeah, it just felt like she was so... I mean, Claire has been behind this in every sense.
Yeah, but we see her from her perspective.
No, of course. But this is months and months have gone by.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's true. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm going to take a quick second to talk about iTunes really quick. Make sure to check us out on iTunes. We have tons of shows on there. Give us 5 stars, please. Give us a good rating. It'll help us keep all this free...
Stuff running.
Yeah. Keep our doors open here at AfterBuzz. So yeah, please check us out on iTunes.
That's a great call to action. That was really good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I should run for something.
I was going to say 2016.
Yeah.
For president. So
where did we leave off here? So Dunbar goes and meets with who's that guy? Please.
At which point?
Give me his name.
Sorry.
She goes and meets with him, and he brings up the whole Jordan Valley thing on the screen, and he says, you know, this is not really about Corrigan.
Oh, I'm remembering this.
This is really about the troops being in the southern part of Russia, and kind of gives her the down low on all of that.
That's right. Okay.
Do you remember that?
No.
I'm sorry, I blinked.
It's okay.
I blinked for 2 seconds, and a whole plot line escaped me. No, I do remember what you're talking about. Because
foreign policy.
I remember this specifically because he had an iPad, and he was doing something on the iPad, and it was coming up on the screen, and I had a moment where I was
right, okay.
I had such a filmmaker moment where I'm wondering if that's actually connected or if it's programmed.
Probably green screen.
It's like, can you pinch to zoom on the iPad and it will do the same on the screen?
I feel like that's basic technology, but I wasn't sure.
I was thinking that too.
And that's why I missed the plot.
Wow, note to self.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Just that he was telling Dunbar that, like, Petrov, you know, Corrigan isn't being detained because of freedom of speech. Because Petrov was trying to appeal to his, like, mm-hmm. traditional fan base. It's because of what's happening in the Jordan Valley, and mm-hmm. he's trying to make a point, and he needs leverage.
Yeah, and that was kind of my point when it comes to Israel, is that it affects more than, yes, they say that they're going to deploy troops, but I understand them wanting absolute security because mm-hmm. they are at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel is always at risk.
Yeah.
So.
I love that they gave Frank a little bit of credit here, being like, if this plan works out, he should get a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes.
And I love that they were giving, like, a little bit of credit to him. I thought that was, like, super, super interesting. It's always interesting to see what people are saying about Frank when he's not in the room.
Right. That he's being too smart is what they said. Like, mm-hmm. how can he be too smart?
Oh, you can be too smart. Yeah. You can think yourself into a hole. That is absolutely true. Moves and counter moves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Frank meets with Mendoza and Bob, and again, they're like, if we could write a law about you using these disaster relief funds, we will, because this is not right.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also impeach you. We're not, you know, scared of doing that, because obviously in the past...
We've impeached presidents before.
Yeah.
Very recently.
So he's still kind of getting fought with about this issue. What's next? I'm trying to... We talked all about this whole... Jackie getting married and stuff. We kind of went out of order, guys.
We didn't talk about God's Cauldron writer. What is his
name?
Tom Yates.
Yes.
Okay. We haven't talked about that.
Yes. Love this guy.
Yes.
God, I'm into this guy.
Right?
Love him. Can't
wait
to see
brains.
He's got brains.
Looks.
He's pretty handsome.
Yeah.
So into it.
Oh, so, he thinks for himself.
He wrote the video game reviews for the game that Frank was playing. So he's like, if you can convince me to play this game under 100 words or whatever it was, then I want you to write my book, and I want you to do a darn good job of selling my story, selling Amworks, using your imagination, and really just speaking to the people. Mm-hmm. So he hires Tom to come on. Propaganda.
Straight up propaganda.
Yeah, interesting that this guy didn't take a lot of persuading either.
I'm sure writing for the president has its own kind of motivation.
I mean, he seems like a pretty kind of... He seems like a little bit of an anarchist, so I'm, like, you know, interested that he's, like...
Let's see where it goes.
I'm definitely curious.
Oh, I'm very curious about him. But Frank touches on that because he basically says no good writer could resist a good story or something along the lines of that. And so I think that it's less that he's supporting the president and more that he's so intrigued by this opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Because who gets that opportunity to
He's appealing to his ego.
And also, do you guys think that we need to be like, you know, because it seemed like that his new book wasn't doing as well as his old book. And maybe it's something about that. Like, maybe he needs, like, a, you know, a career boost here. Because, it, like, he had that one girl come into his new book signing with his old book. And he's like, all right, remember to read the new one.
She's like, I'll get it on my Nook.
Yeah, my Kindle.
My Kindle, there we go.
I think it absolutely has everything to do with that. I mean, this guy is coming off the heels of a really successful first book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to follow that up. I mean, mm-hmm. this book put him on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And so what better way to follow up than to do a story about what happens, or I guess do a story with the president, about the president, or about something that the president wants, you know, to pass through into law. So, you know, it's definitely appealing to his ego, but it's definitely also appealing to his need to succeed or one-up himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're also assuming that he's going to write what Frank wants.
Oh, no, I'm not assuming that at all.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm not assuming that at all. I agree with you. I think it's more along the lines of curiosity and seeing where things go.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I feel like he's going mm-hmm. in his mind.
He could do a lot of damage.
Yeah, because he keeps on asking questions to Frank, and then Frank will turn and ask a question about him, mm-hmm. and he's like, "This book's not about me, mm-hmm. Mister. Like, let's not talk about me."
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then the last part. Oh my God,
right.
We all want to talk about this part. Claire and her. Wow.
Shade McGabe,
but yeah. Just
so good.
Like, I can't even find the words to describe
it. Almost
how
like hanging on the words, hanging on Frank's words, like ready to say what she was going to say. Which is, I don't know. I don't want to give it away.
No, not yet.
Okay.
That's the next episode.
Sorry.
She goes and she talks to the Russian ambassador.
Alexei.
While she's in the restroom.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
he's like, doesn't want to go in there. But her assistant or whatever was like, no, please. She has to go catch a flight. And he goes in and just the way she was putting on her makeup and then asking, like, my eyes, are they okay? My lips, what is it? And he's like, you look great, you know? But he's so
playing
shy.
Mind games.
Yes.
Oh, it's such a wonderful power play because she's making him incredibly uncomfortable.
And she's also making herself as un-first lady-like as possible.
Yeah.
Because this whole thing has been about, like, you make a great first lady, not so much a U.S. ambassador.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So now she's just trying to take off that mask in front of him and just be like, who's first lady now?
Yeah, and almost, it was such... In ways, it was leveling the playing field in, like, let's just talk you and me personal, not with all of this, you know, in the most intimate... No pretense, but in the same way...
No formality.
No formality, but also it's not that at all, because it's I own you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bringing him into the women's restroom, especially for... I mean, she is the first lady. She is. And, I mean, there's the whole fact that he's, I'm sure, never... If he's been into the women's restroom, it's not in the White House, and it's not...
just to talk.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just to have a conversation about...
yeah, no good intentions there.
No. So it was totally throwing him off balance and making him immediately feel like he's out of his comfort zone, because he is, both emotionally and physically. So she could just manipulate him and play with him in whatever way that she wants.
I mean, she doesn't even close the stall door. Like, she could have closed the stall door and still
she closed it and then opened it back.
And then opened back up,
and said, did you think we were done here?
Yeah, and I'm like, no, she's not. Like, she's sitting on the toilet. So she tells him that the executive order was made, that 5,000 U.S. troops are going to be sent.
We need Michael Corrigan released also.
Yes, mm-hmm. and just slips that in there. So once Russia sees that they're kind of cornered, I mean, Israel's going to be back on, Palestine's going to be back on, so they kind of have to be back on as well. He's like, okay, I'll talk to Petrov. Like, I'll see what I can do about Corrigan.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, thanks. Like, yeah. Bye.
And in the back of her head, she's like, yeah, you're going to talk to Petrov. And yeah, I'm going to see what he's going to do about Corrigan, because I just told you what he's going to do.
Yeah. I thought that was definitely the first time we've seen season one and season two Claire come out.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We haven't seen her like that at all this season.
Yeah, she's been very reserved, kind of almost insular. Like, I don't know, just very in her head.
I mean, I just think that she's losing confidence left and right.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you 100%.
And she was in total control here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. I like seeing that side of Claire.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
No, I like it better this way when we lost it a little, because I didn't realize how much I missed it until we hadn't seen it in five or in six episodes or whatever. And so then to see it come back out and you're just like, you know, I thought we were missing something.
You being a total and complete badass. Yeah.
So they're driving away, and Frank gets a phone call, and I guess they find out that they are going to Moscow. And he goes, "You did it, Claire. You made a miracle happen." And she's like, "We did it." Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Oh, dang." She's coming back around. Mm-hmm. You know, she's now kind of...
She apologized, didn't she, for not letting him sleep in the bed?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, over totally. The cigarette. They are, they had a cigarette.
They shared a cigarette. Speaking of season one, season two.
Yeah. Oh, I loved that. I love their little window cigarette sessions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's where that's when they're
yeah, exactly. That's when they're most themselves, and they're both, they see each other. They really truly see each other and are themselves with each other.
Yeah, cigarette's definitely a symbol of, you know.
It's the link.
And a cigarette is gross and dirty and, and it's unrefined. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of when they get to be themselves and they kind of get to take the mask off a little bit.
Ooh, I like that. Ooh, yeah, I like that. Analysis is great. Sorry.
And our very last scene, we see the people lining up over in by the Lincoln Memorial for this AmWorks. Everybody's signing up for jobs. And this scene, talk about how it was shot. I mean, it was like faces and faces and faces and it just kept going. I'm like, okay, and like, then, what are we going to see? And then it's Freddy.
My heart.
If anybody deserves a job,
it's Freddy.
It's Freddy. Yeah. Get that man a job.
Do you know, I actually go out and buy ribs sometimes while watching House of Cards. It's like a thing I do with my friends. We go and we get ribs and we watch House of Cards.
I don't blame you at all.
Yeah. Absolutely. Freddy, that hurt me.
Yeah.
That wasn't fair, writers. That was just a cheap shot.
Yeah, but just the way the fireworks, and you could see it in his eyes, and it's like a glimmer of hope that he has, and it was just really well done.
It was really cool. What a great way to end that episode. Yeah. The whole thing.
Well, for him, the thing about it for me, for him, the reason it kind of broke my heart is you remember that he's in the unemployment line, and it was just like... I loved the contrast of you have like the triumphant music in the background and the fireworks.
And they're right smack dab in the middle of the mall, aren't they? The National Mall.
Were they in the National Mall? I thought they were outside.
Yeah, like the Lincoln...
Whatever, they were right. They were around like all of the most prestigious buildings in the country.
Yeah. Absolutely, and there was this beautiful juxtaposition of the triumphant music and his like rousing speech and the fireworks and all of the unemployed people. Mm. Because, they're signing up for jobs, but these people do not have them as of now. That is so damn awful, including this one person who we recognize, Freddie, who we love, or at least I love.
Yeah, it's nice to put a face to the unemployed people, know what I mean?
And it's you're reminded of the people, the common man, that we don't really see in this show.
And they're really quite they're really, what is the word I'm looking for? They can't be held accountable for their innocence. They're all innocents is what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
And especially Freddy, you know what I mean? So you just like, your heart kind of goes out.
You're like, Freddy. All right, guys, that's our episode. Where can the people find you?
The people can find the common
people.
Man.
The lovely
if you
people.
Will.
Peasants.
The plebeians. No, our dearest viewers, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Autumn Chickless.
You can find me at Julian Dujaric on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can find me on Twitter at Quinn Skillian. You can find me on Instagram at Quinstagram. And if you need a laugh after all this House of Cards, you can find me on Vine at the Quinby.
Ooh, and you can find me on Twitter at Pegarad. Thank you so much for tuning in. See you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.